Hey everybody, SAG-AFTRA has just released their guidelines for podcasters, and they've asked that we do not cover struck content, which is films, TV shows, and for us, that means things like Ahsoka, Star Wars Rebels. So in solidarity with the artists, SAG-AFTRA, and the writers at WGA, we will not be covering those things on our podcast. We will not be releasing our Ahsoka episodes until the strike is done. We've already recorded many of our Star Wars Rebels rewatch episodes. We're going to be holding on to those till after the strike is over. For now, our podcast is going to focus on Star Wars books, Star Wars comics, Star Wars video games, which is not struck content. And not to worry, there's plenty of Star Wars out there that isn't on the screen that maybe a lot of you guys are missing. So please stick with us. Please keep listening. Please enjoy. We stand in solidarity with the artists. We believe that they deserve to get better residuals and protections against AI and for their work of bringing us all the things that we've loved. These shows, these series, these movies that we've watched and enjoyed our entire lives. So thank you for listening. If you're looking for more ways to help, head over to the SAG-AFTRA website or the WGA website. I know there's lots of ways to get involved. They have lots of FAQs for influencers, podcasters, journalists, non-union members, all kinds of different things out there, that ways that you can get involved and stand up for the artists. Thank you guys so much for listening, and may the Force be with you. Hey everybody, and welcome to the Rogue Rebels podcast. The vibe is a little bit different because I'm in the middle of some weather and I'm finding my center. Not quite in the center of the hurricane, but close enough. Hey, my name's Sal. I'm one of your hosts today. I'm your only host. But that doesn't mean that I'm alone, because I don't do these shows alone. Who do I look like? A person that does shows alone? Hey, with me today is a very special person who's really good at doing shows alone. From Jam Transmissions, this is my boy, Rick Villanueva.
Well, hello there. How's it going?
Not bad, buddy, all things considered. How about you?
I'm all right. I feel like I should open up my umbrella, even though I'm miles and miles and miles and miles and miles away from you. But I can hear that rain back there.
Oh, okay. I was like, are you like blocking sunshine? What's happening over there?
No, actually, there's a swimming pool close by. It was really hot today over here, Michigan summer.
Yeah.
But, man, things are good.
More of a sympathy umbrella than anything.
Right. A parasol.
Gotcha. I get it.
I'll put an umbrella in my drink.
No, this is SoCal, man. We use umbrellas for everything. Rain, shine, drinks. It's all good.
Transportation.
Mm-hmm. Transportation. maybe in a couple hours I'll let you know how that goes.
Right.
It's good times. We're just hanging out over here, and as I said before, we're gonna be talking to comic books. We're gonna talk about the High Republic Adventures phase 2, the entire series, 10 issues from Daniel Jose Older, Harvey Tolibao, and is it Tony Bruno are the like main artists for the series. I dig that High Republic stuff, and you also know I dig my Daniel Jose Older content. Definitely one of my favorite authors in the mix, in the Star Wars mix right now. What about you, Rick? How are you feeling about the High Republic these days?
I need to put this disclaimer on it first, since the book isn't out yet, but having read the Tales from Light and Life mm-hmm. short story book,
mm-hmm.
I'm way hyped. Like, I love the High Republic anyway, but reading that book and gearing up for phase 3 has me really, really excited. And I don't want to talk specifics about that book yet, because it's not out yet.
Mm-hmm.
Plug for my show, I did a spoiler-free review of it a week or two ago. So you can kind of hear my thoughts, and I don't spoil anything. Just kind of like general thoughts about each of the stories and kind of what they're about. But that book got me really, really hyped. I love the way phase two ended.
Mm-hmm.
The structure of phase two was a lot different than phase one, but the only thing that gets me down about phase two is I kind of feel like it's going to be some time before we get to reconnect with some of these characters.
Yeah.
And there's some things that I want to know that weren't directly answered by the end of the phase.
Mm-hmm. I kind of talked about this with, let's see, I think I did like Cataclysm, an episode on Cataclysm with King Tom. And I think Laura and I from Force Toast talked Path of Vengeance. And like we all kind of, you know, there phase two ends with some questions. You know what I mean? So like you get answers to some things that you thought, and then you get answers to things that you didn't think. And then you still have some questions unanswered or some new questions. You know, if you've been like keeping up with everything the way that I do, there are still a few things. And like Tales of Light and Life. I love anthologies in general. I think I've been pretty vocal about that before, because I love seeing these. Generally, you get to see things that you would never get in other. You're not going to get a whole book about a stormtrooper that likes dewbacks, or, you know,
right.
A guy in Echo Base that like delivers everybody's calf or whatever. But like, it's really, really cool to see all of these neat little shades of little things. And like, not that they're, I don't want to call them hit and miss. I just want to say that, like, the stories are so varied and so, like, there's always going to be something for you, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're digging into a book that's got 10 stories, chances are at least one of them's going to, like, be perfect for you, even if they aren't all that. But Stories of Light and Life, like you said, I just finished it also. I think the same thing. It's really, really good. I also really like that it spans the breadth of phases, so... You know, we do get to see some familiar faces from phase one and phase two and catch up on their stories a little bit. So, like, things like that, especially for those of us that are really worried about our phase two people and being like, when are we ever going to see him again? Well, you might get a little something, you know, soon. So that's cool.
Yeah. One of the things that I really liked about the book was the fact that it was laid out chronologically.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, it starts with some phase two, you know, characters.
Right,
and
right.
By the end of the book, there's like four or five stories that kind of run concurrently and kind of take place, or they run past the end of like the Fallen Star or right. Midnight Horizon.
Right.
But nothing super major happens in those. It's kind of like... It's laying the seeds. And I mean, there's two new characters that are in the book too at the end that we'll probably see more of in phase three. But like in general, the High Republic for me has been such a breath of fresh air, because it almost feels like a Star Wars Elseworlds, where it's like it's way earlier in the timeline and nothing of this time as of yet connects to any of the major players like in the saga. You know what I mean? Like in the movies and stuff that we've gotten. Yeah. So it almost feels like, in a way, it's like this alternate timeline Star Wars, because it's still 100% Star Wars, but it's like this other thing. I love the fact that it's disconnected. I mean, I remember way early on, me and Pete and I talking on Jam Transmissions a long time ago about like what Star Wars was going to be like after Episode 9 came out, and what kind of stories we were going to get. And it was like, I want something new. I want something fresh. You know, of course I'm going to want to know more about Luke, Leia, Han, and all the, you know, the familiar characters, but to have something of these all new characters with totally unique skill sets or perspectives, you know, stuff like that, has been one of my favorite things. Like when these books come out, and I mean, I have to say this for myself, and I say this in a very humble way, like being added to the reviewer list and being able to read some of these books early for review has been like such a blessing, because like the anticipation for these books, like it sucks to have to wait until release. and I know like how lucky we are to have advanced, you know, copies to be able to read this stuff. And to like, it's on the one hand, it's like you cut down the wait time to read the thing, but it lengthens the amount of time that you can't talk about it before like embargoes, before the thing releases.
Right.
So you kind of have to live with the secret for a little bit of, you know, something shocking that happens in a book, or, you know, or what I have now with reviewing for Pro, or doing the quick shots for Pro Axiom, getting to read the books a little bit early to do the quick shots and stuff like that, and like sitting on some of that information with that. Can't really talk about it, yeah, you know what yeah. I mean, until the content is on the public. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but it is totally a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, dude. I really like, you know, of course I love getting all the advanced stuff in general. Like, just for me, I get to live with those books for a little while, but it also gives me a little bit of time sometimes, because I don't, you know, I'm not a King Tom over here who is like data input and processed in like 3 seconds when the book comes out. So like, even when I get the review copies early, you know, like, it still takes me time to go through it and get my reviews ready and everything. And so I really do enjoy that. But I mean, just like, I'm in it for the stories. Like, I've always just loved right. stories. And like you were talking about these things being their own thing, so separated. It is a little bit refreshing. And I'm going to be that guy to be like, oh, I don't have to worry about like Darth Vader showing up in this one. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, which is like, it's almost, it's not like a, it's a thing that happens often enough that it can be a funny joke in stuff that we're related, and no matter what the timeline is, I guess this is like Darth Vader's lightsaber, or I guess this is Darth Vader, or I guess this is, oh look, it's the Emperor's this, or Count Dooku's that, in all these times that are so familiar where they have all these hard lines to tie into a movie or, you know, a more familiar piece of media. A lot of times we do see those things. And I really enjoy it when it's not that huge things. Like when I watch a show called Obi-Wan Kenobi and then he's like, Quinlan was here. That's rad. But then, of course, also, yes, of course, Darth Vader's going to show up in that show. That's right, not a right. surprise. You know, but just think, like, I like the world being so unfettered. And so, like, I feel like the creators have the freedom not to worry, or even, like, they're free to do with their story. And I think that's why... for me, this whole publishing phase, or I don't know what you, publishing initiative they call it, is so strong.
Yeah, it's like creators got to play in the Star Wars sandbox, and the High Republic authors are like in the rest of the playground. You know what I mean? Like, borders are completely separated from like.
I mean, it's like they're making their own sandbox. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really cool to have, for anybody who listens to my show, and you've been on my show, like how I talk about perspectives, to have all of these fresh authors come in and put their spin on these characters. And, you know, when I did the review for Path of Vengeance, talking about like what personally did Kevin Scott put into that book, knowing the things that he was tweeting about mm-hmm. like mental health and the way people were treating him online and stuff like that. Like, some of that to me feels like it comes through in the book, because you have these characters that are dealing with a trauma or regrets or mistakes, you know, things like that, you know, mm-hmm. like the what ifs that we all, that keep us up at night. And knowing that he went through that stuff personally, at least coinciding to, you know, to what was the creative period of the book, it lends that much more realism to these like crazy wacky stories. Same thing when talking about Rise of the Red Blade, like what Delilah Dawson went through. Mm-hmm. That she inputs into these stories, and like having all of these fresh voices come in and be able to tell these stories and put their spins and their perspectives on it is something that I've really appreciated. Because it seemed like reading a lot of the EU stuff, which I really enjoy, but I don't know if there was a lot of that personal input in those stories. And there's a lot of books that I've forgotten because, you know, I was reading some of those books 30 years ago, but I didn't read Revan and have the same knowledge of what Drew Karpyshyn was going through at the time. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't read it when it came out. So like, I wasn't aware, and you know, social media wasn't a thing to know like what Drew was feeling, you know, he wasn't like live blogging his life
for sure.
at the same time. And I like that, you know, we have access to these authors the way that we do with social media.
Yeah.
To kind of know what this stuff is like feeding into these stories.
Yeah. I mean, not to like throw any shit. Like, I do feel like in, like, that's something that I see it now often. Like, and to put it another way, I see it come off the page from the author. Like, when I read a book of an author who really like that, or create, like, whatever the creators are, like, I can see it and I can feel it when I'm reading whatever the thing is. Mm-hmm. So, like, it jumps off the page to me. So, and that's a thing that mm-hmm. I didn't feel so much back in the EU. Like you were talking about, but also like the, I did happen sporadically. Like, I definitely felt that with, like, the X-Wing books. Like, mm-hmm. it's clear that those people loved what they were doing, and they put their own quirks and, like, created their own, like, really loving characters that they paid attention to. You know what I mean? And I think, I wonder if part of the reason was because they were so bound by these, the main three and the this and that, that, like, they didn't have that freedom to inject their own love into it or whatever. Right. Or right. if it's, or conversely, if it's the people that they are hiring now are people who have loved this thing like we do since they were kids. You know what I mean? Like, because it could just be generational too. But I see it jump off the page. When E.K. Johnston writes about Padme, I can see that she's thought about this and loved this character since she was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, when Delilah writes these badass characters, I can see that she pays special attention and cares about them the way that we do. When whoever, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of that now. Like, and not just with books. Like, I can see it in the comic book. Like this series that we're about to talk about, Daniel Jose Elder, really, like, he really gives us a fresh world from his lens. And that's something that's what draws me to that author. Like, Daniel Jose Elder has a very unique voice that I connect to.
I was just going to say that, like, of all of the, let's just say of the five architects here, uh-huh. you know, the five original authors of the High Republic, DJ Elder has, I think, the most unique voice on the page. Like, I remember the first time reading Last Shot, and he has a way of injecting, like, real world, like, slang or colloquialisms mm-hmm. that, like, mm-hmm. on the surface, like, they used to take me out of the story. Like, what? Why would he? I've never heard anybody in Star Wars say anything like that. But now I've come, like, it's become part of the window dressing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's normalized it for me in a way that, like, when I do hear something kind of goofy like that, I'm like, yep. Even if I didn't know it was, like, his name was on the cover of the book and I just read it, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is a Daniel Jose Elder joint right here, man. Like, yeah, he's throwing in all kinds of slang nonsense. And, you know, it was jarring at first, but now I'm like, that's just how my man writes.
Yeah.
So that's Star Wars for him.
Yeah. No, I love it. And I love that it almost makes things feel, at least to me, usually it feels more grounded. It feels like he has a way of injecting real world things into there in ways that make that world feel real, as opposed to taking away from the fantasticness of Star Wars.
Like, I mean, didn't he write in Last Shot that Han was basically stepping on, like, space Legos?
Yeah. And, like, the baby kicks him in the face when he's, like, in bed. Like, that's all real stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the same book where there's, like, a psycho robo-surgeon, cyborg, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, he hits all these things, like, very, like, mixed, like, from all these different, like, tonal, which is, like, a very George Lucas thing. Like, you take all these different genres and create something. Like, DJ will take something like a very, like, horror-centric villain, a very real-life midlife crisis of dudes with babies, you know, or who are about to get married and having midlife panic attacks, you know, into a fantastical world of rebels and robots and, you know, galactic consequences. You know what I mean? Like, like fitting all that stuff together, as we know, is, like, kind of a special thing. But being able to do that and put your own spin on it, like, is something I respect.
Yeah, I wonder now, like, how much of his growing into fatherhood, you know, is going to make it into these stories.
Right.
Like, are we going to feel more of that mentorship, which he writes really well anyway, but mm-hmm. are we going to feel more of that as he's, you know, raising his son with his wife now? Like, I look forward to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, having the accessibility to these authors and kind of having them be willing to share things in their personal lives, you know, to an extent, it just, to me, it adds more context to the stories.
For sure. Yeah. I just, like, you know, it's good stuff and it's good authorship. It's good writing. And it, for me, it, like, pulls me into the story a lot. Yeah, and it's like making something feel more authentic by making it feel it's like the writing equivalent of lived in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's, I dig that. Let's see what we got here. Real quick, check us out at theroguerebels.com. Go like our Facebook page. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, Hi, whatever else comes up in the next couple of days at The Rogue Rebels, except for Twitter, or the artist formerly known as Twitter, where we are Rogue Rebels fam. Yeah, good times. Where can people find you on the interwebs, bud?
Right now, primarily on Twitter and Blue Sky at Cad Bane's Bounty. And you can follow the show, if you want, on Twitter at JTComlink and on Blue Sky at JamTransmissions.com. Or the easy way to find all of that stuff is to go to the website, JamTransmissions.com, and you can find links for all the different ways to listen. You can find links to all of my friends' shows, including the Rogue Rebels. Link to my TeePublic where I got a couple shirts up and, you know, all of that fun stuff.
Cool. All right, let's see. I'm going to go through some spoiler summaries for both series, and then we're just going to talk about the comics and all that good stuff. So let's see. The first, like, it's 10 issues. You know what? I'm just going to talk about it like a thing because I didn't write anything. So here we go. yes, I am a professional. So, the High Republic Adventures, Daniel Jose Older. It's basically focuses on a Padawan named Sav Maligan at the Jedi Temple on Takodana. But Sav Maligan thinks the coolest thing in the world is pirates, and Maz Kanata's castle is right across the lake. So every night she kind of sneaks over there and, like, lives a pirate life and enjoys the pirate world until one day she goes undercover to join a pirate troop. Maz Kanata gets kidnapped. They get in a fight with the Dank Grax, and then she goes double undercover to join the Dank Grax to find out where they're keeping Maz Kanata, which takes them all to the Battle of Jeddah, where they, you know, you face off against Irem, Aroni, Jedi, and all the chaos that's going on over there, complete with a whole cool pirate crew, plus the Dank Grax, which are, like, evil, somewhat force culty pirates, where we find out that the whole thing was a ruse to go back and take Takodana, so they return to reclaim Maz's castle and help their buddies out. And Sav ultimately decides that she needs to be a Padawan and a pirate because both things are rad. Boom. That's the gist of the entire story, but it is super funny. It is like, they're like massive battling set pieces, especially on the Battle of Jeddah. You got people like Dexter Jetster and Therm Scissor Punch, Maz Kanata, and then some few new characters like the Dank Grax dude, which I forgot his name. Alax, no, that's me. Arkik Vaughn, and he looks like a Geonosian, but I think he's like a sorcerer, an ex-sorcerer of Tund. Like all the Dank Grax are like ex-force cult people. So they're like somewhat forcey, but like not quite. And then that's how they work their ship. But we also get to see like a lot of the, what's the stuff? Like the Irem and Irono soldiers that we've read about in three or four books if we've been keeping up with the High Republic stuff. Now you get to see it on the page. That was kind of cool. But yeah, that's the gist of it. That's my summary. Thank you for your time, Your Honor. Let's see, man. What do you... Sav Maligan is like the coolest little adorable child.
Yeah, Sav is like... Sav was in phase one of the High Republic. So for anybody who read all the phase one comics but didn't read these, this is Sav much younger. She's like 16 or 17 right now, I think. And obviously there's... What is it? Like... 150 years between phase one and phase two.
Yeah.
She's much older in phase one. Obviously she's, you know, she's been through some things.
Mm-hmm.
But to see her at this point in her life where she is struggling with who it is that she wants to be and seeking that adventure, and not like the rigidity of the Jedi of the time, which it's not that rigid. It's very jello rigid, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first issue of this book, you know, I remember reading this thing and being like, okay, we got 10 issues. This is like it's a younger reader type comic. I know DJ likes to write some fun stuff. And I think when I started this book, just like personally, my own headspace, well, I was not ready for it. Like I was in a little bit of a funk at the time, and like things are much better now. But as the series went on, and then there was the delay at the end of the series. So I think like the last two or three issues all came out
right
within a week of each other.
Yeah.
I felt so good about who these people are and like the journey of discovery that they almost all go through.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's weird to say, because like, comics generally don't do this, books would do this more so, but like this book, this series, like helped get me out of that funk because it was so fun. And having a character like Sav be like, I love doing pirate stuff, but I'm still a Jedi.
Yeah.
And like having to find that balance within herself.
I like the, like just Sav as a general character. Like if you met her in phase one, she's like the elder Jedi at Takodana who like was there when Kort was little or whatever. And like the Nile attack Takodana Castle. And Sav is like, well, this can't stand. And she like goes and she's like jumping from ship to ship, destroying them with lightsabers. Like it's some very like super crazy Jedi things. And then she's like, yeah, and get out and stay out, like as the battle ends and stuff. So then to flash back when she's young and she's just like, man, being a Jedi is so boring. Like they just want you to admit it. And it's not even that she like doesn't like Jedi things. It seems like it's not like it's nothing like Inquisitor Rise of the Red Blade or Anakin where you have these problems with attachment or anything. She's just like, this is boring. I love adventure. It's a little more like Luke Skywalker if I had to compare it to anything. Luke is right. Just bored of his life on that damn farm. What are we farming? Water? Are you serious?
Well, it can't help that she's basically, she lives across the lake from like the cool camp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That does gotta be tough. Like,
she got sent off to do like she learned she's like doing like menial chore camp and right across the way is like Bill Murray and Meatballs is happening and she's like, yo, I want to go hang out with those folks. And she goes over there and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, she lives at the orphanage on the other side across the street from Disneyland.
Yep.
And she's like, you know what would be awesome? A pirate ride right about now. And like while the series starts off definitely focused on her, by the time you get through the series, there's like all the little pirate crew, like are characters and are fun and interesting in their own way. Like this is, you know, like getting into like a little bit of DJ Elder's tone. There are so many of these things that are like funny to me that he does sometimes. And one of them is like the way that the characters speak. And so there's a, like very first, like it's in the first issue, like you were talking about, she's like sneaking out and she's like, every night I like, and it's kind of all of her like little head, you know, like obviously she's not talking to anybody. She's talking to us, the reader, but she's really talking to herself, you know? And she's like, that's why every night I like sneak out to da 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 da. And it's like, there's a little ferry boat with a ferry boat droid that takes her across the lake. And the little droid is like, ah, yes, the Padawan returns. One credit for the blah, 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 you know? And then she's like, okay, like, here's 2 credits. Like, please be quiet. Ah, yes, a covert mission of blood. It's not a covert mission if you're being so loud. And, like, stuff like that just makes me laugh. That's, like, glorious and wonderful. And that's such a Star Wars. Like, giving the droids quirks and just, like, these little things that are fun and silly. Like, R5 being scared for no real reason. L3 wanting droid freedom, you know?
Like, yeah, I love cute. That kind of stuff too. It's all of that like situational humor. It's very, it's not a one-to-one, but it feels like the same way Han Solo is in the movies, where he's just responding to what's happening around him.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this droid who doesn't know how, it doesn't have a whisper setting. It's just like, we're off on an adventure. And it's like, yo, it's midnight and everybody's asleep.
Yes.
Sleeping they are. Yes, you are correct. Uh-huh. And it's like, all right, yes. Keep it down, man.
Of course we shall sneak. Yeah, it's so good. You know, and so like I said, Dexter Jetsters, it's a good month for Dexter Jester, by the way.
Hell yeah.
It's gonna be. So the Dexter Jester is part in this story too, as well as Maz Kanata. We already know she was around for 1,000 years. Same castle, same things. And I don't know about you, but I played so much damn Battlefront that like when I'm looking at I'm guessing the artists got a lot of the same concepts and renders from Battlefront that I have played through. Because a lot of the backgrounds as she's going through she goes to the entryway and I'm like, oh yes, I've been through that entryway and slashed people to death or blown them up with that Inversio or whatever it is. Yeah, oh yes, this is the top of the parapet. This is where I run and hide and then hit somebody with a shock droid while I like blast them so they can't reflect the lightsaber thing.
This is where the lightsaber's going to be hidden.
Yeah. This is where Boba Fett blew me off the roof. Yeah. So like just I don't know, like little things like that, like familiar settings, because that's like the tie. If you have no other tie, like if you were a general Star Wars fan who didn't read High Republic, you'd be like, oh, Maz Kanata's castle. There's a weird little Jedi that likes to go hang out there 400 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But like the setting is so well defined and interesting and in the art that you could be like, oh, yes, I was there. Or maybe that's just me because I play too much Battlefront. Hey, leave me alone.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, man.
I didn't say I was good at it. Let's see. So Sav and like part of like in this story, it starts off and she's like, I want to hear his like because Dexter Jester is there. And so like that's a special thing. Like, oh, my God, this like guy comes by once in a while and his stories are so good. And they end up like finding is it the I forgot the bad guy's name again. Arkik Vaughn.
Yeah.
The guy who's the leader of the Dankgrax that like they come upon him in a forest trying to like with some droid soldiers and they kill them all. And then she's like, okay, don't tell them because she kills them with lightsabers. And she's like, please don't tell anybody I'm an undercover Jedi. And he's like, ah, don't worry about it. So then they get back and he tells the whole story about like, well, we win and she helped me, you know, she's a cool little pirate, you know. And she like Dexter keeps her secret. And then Maz is like, well, you want to join the pirate crew? And of course, like this like little teen, it's like the greatest thing in the world. It's like, yeah, that's, I know. Trying to think of a real life any movie you've seen where the kid wants to do something and looks up to their hero and then they're like, why don't you come hang out, we could use you on our team. That's that moment.
Let's go with the Lost Boys. It's like the Lost Boys when,
okay, that's what, good.
Like the last one becomes a vampire and it's like, you get to hang out with us but we're freaky, look at our faces in the dark.
That movie holds up so much.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Have you know what, the rest of the villains, when they show in issue 2, like the rest of the crew, what is it like?
The Dankgrax, right?
Dern, Siakim, and Lavalox, gotcha. Verzin. Mm-hmm. I got the page open. Like I would not have remembered their names otherwise.
Thank you. I'm glad I appreciate your service.
Yeah, they're just as goofy too, man.
Yeah,
like Dern doesn't really say a whole lot. Siakim is pretty badass. And then you got Lavalox, who,
yeah, he's like the like crazy painted Kosian or the crazy colored Kosian.
Yeah.
And he's just like, ah, boom, bah, like it's almost like he speaks in like sound effects.
Yeah. His tongue's always sticking out of his mouth.
Yeah.
He got a cape.
Yeah. He's definitely like, I would say like the most punk rock out of all of them. but like definitely doesn't use words well or often.
He's like if the Ultimate Warrior from 1988 on all the cocaine was in Star Wars.
There you go, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's, and he's like the pilot guy. And then what'd you say, Asaya Keen is like, she's like a young, like she's almost like a good, like she ends up being buddies with Sav. Mm-hmm. As she like integrates into the crew and she's like the one who's like, well, this is what we do, this is who this is, and don't worry about him, da 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 da, because she's like the other young kid who's like a, what is she, Zabrak? And yeah. Then
Dern is
he's the guy with the cloak who just appears everywhere, right?
Yeah, but he's like what's his speed? He's like Plagueis. What's his, he's immune, right?
Oh, is he? I thought he was a Duros, but I can't tell. Yeah, you're right.
No, I think he's immune because unless Duros are all come in different colors, but he's like pale. He mm-hmm. looks more immune to me, but gotcha. I could be wrong.
You could be right.
Hey. He doesn't have Duros eyes.
Yeah, they're not red, huh?
And I love me some Duros eyes. Those sexy eyes.
All right, hold on. I'm gonna find the answer while you're talking. Dern, right. Boom. You ready? Here Let's we go. Hear. Survey says. Survey says nothing. Species, Mune. You are correct, you sir. Go. Yeah, you're right. He's got that Mune forehead, man. I should have seen it.
He got a 7 head.
Yeah, yeah. 4x4x forehead. Yeah, so they're, and their whole thing is they kidnap Maz. And then that's when Sav decides to go with them. But before, when she's running with Maz's people, whose names I all forgot already, there is a, like, Therm Scissor Punch is one of them, which also is like, okay, now we know that Therm Scissor Punch is also 1,000 or whatever. Although I think he says at one point, when they're like, oh, good job, old man. And he's like, I'm a teenager, but okay.
He's a teenager with a Tom Selleck mustache.
Yeah, your boy. And so Dexter Jester's got a pretty good mustache on him in this. I mean, he always had a good one, but it's just so much more pronounced because it's less salt and pepper.
He got that duster.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, so you got Dexter Jester on Maz's crew. You got Sav. You got Therm Scissor Punch. You have, what's his name? Alax. Alak. And he's like a half spider, half dude who's this ex cult of weird assassins persons people who left because he wanted to save his daughter, whose name is Quiet Shen.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And then Sav gets the stories kind of told to her throughout as she's like meeting everybody, and she's like, oh, don't worry about him. He actually returned, he used to be part of these assassins, blah, blah, blah. He left the thing. He had a baby. Then he returned and killed everybody and took the baby. That's why those assassins don't exist anymore. You know. And then you have, is it Raff Thatchburn? Is that the person? Is that the, Raff Thatchburn is an inspector who's like hunting down the pirates.
Yeah, he's like a cop.
Yeah, and he's like on their trail, and so like they don't want him on the trail, but Alak is secretly in love with him and keeps like dropping clues like, oh, we should tell them that these guys, because like he's also like, they should go get the Dankrax because they're like doing bad stuff and kidnapping people and all this. We're just trying to help Maz. So like they're like the good pirate. Like at the beginning, the inspector gets in a fight at Maz's castle, so Maz kicks him out. And he's got like a little Corellian hound to help him and stuff. Like at one point, Sav, the Corellian hound comes, and so she's like, oh no, he knows. And so she like gives, like she has the Corellian hound take her lightsabers back to him to be like, don't break my cover, you know. And he like kind of gets it, and it's also like a very important story point for him to hear. He's like, wait, they trust me this Jedi trust me this much with her lightsabers to like give me, what have I done to earn this trust? What actions could I have taken? Nope, I have not. Like, so he starts trying to like really help them out and do their things to earn their trust that he feels that he was given unjustly. It's very cute stuff.
It was a gift freely given.
There you go. There you go. Dude. Therm Scissor Punch. What's your Therm Scissor Punch history? Like, did you collect the card at Denny's? Like, what are we talking here, Rick?
You know what? The promotion for Solo was so bad, I didn't even know that Denny's was even doing a thing.
Okay.
Like, I remember hearing about it, like, after the fact and being like, wait, I could have stole one of those menus and just, like, and had Darth Maul pancakes or whatever the hell they had under me. I don't even know what they had.
I think it was the Afterburner Burger.
And there
it
you
was
go.
Like, yeah, it wasn't bad.
Whatever it was. I don't even, that's how, like, little I knew about it at the time. Like, I know all about it now, or not all about it, but I knew you know, enough about it now that it existed. But I remember when the first time hearing the name Therm Scissor Punch, and just thinking like, that's a name, and like instantly falling in love with it because it's dumb as hell.
Yeah, and that's like, the kind of
And like in these books are full of that, like just like punch you in the face, like, oh yeah, like it's gonna be silly.
Yeah,
kind of stuff. Like, and like what. We got one more member of the team that's still there. It's Oramont Vizel, who is like almost like a bombs expert.
Okay.
That's the big blue dude.
Uh-huh.
He looks like a fish. Like,
yeah.
He looks like Edward G. Robinson, but like the Star Wars.
He looks
version.
Like a fish in Fenrau's armor.
There you go.
Vizel. Fenrau's season 4 armor. Season 4 Star Wars Rebels armor. Okay, how specific do I need to be? He's got too many armor. Not in his pilot armor. Yeah, Mega Man Fenrau.
They make up that like quintessential comic book team of like, there's the big muscle, there's the smart one, there's
right
the spy. You know, there's all like the other kind of character, and then Saab Mulligan comes in with her big ass hat and like, I'm gonna sneak around with you guys with my giant sombrero, and ain't nothing you can do about it. And Boss is like, okay, I guess I'm on a board.
My favorite thing is that, so she has like her giant, like, cause she, Sav is a Cayuso. So, you know, just like, Embo and Trying to think of other Kaizo. I mean, is the dude on Jakku a Kaizo too? The toy. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Zuvio.
Zuvio. Is Constable Zuvio a Kaizo, right?
I think so.
Okay, well, he's got the same hat.
Yeah.
Okay, so like Constable Zuvio and his cousins or whoever are on that planet with him, those are all Kaizos. So Sav is a Kaizo, and when she goes undercover with... she has the big round hat, but then when she goes undercover with the Dank Grax, she puts like a weird little cone head hat, a different hat. And I just like that she changes her undercover hat with her undercover persona. She's like, ah, Dank Grax. Even though like the Kaizo hat, I don't think has anything to do with Jedi, but it's just cute that she changes hats.
Yeah, they'll never wreck it. It's like when one of the Avengers just puts on a blank baseball cap in the middle of an airport.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never know that's Captain America under that hat.
It's good times. Oh, Coromant Vizzle, like your fish dude. The one thing that you didn't mention that I love is he's like an ex-con, but also they part of his release is that he has to like constantly. He like has his parole officer with him constantly.
Oh yeah.
And like basically, it's this like little tiny dude who lives in his backpack. And every time he does something and breaks the law, he comes out and he's like, you have violated section 3.23 of the Galactic International Law, and whoa! But then apparently they're like, oh my god, does he do that every time? And then they're like, well, what happens is he comes out to like give me crap. But as soon as he realized that he is like an accessory to the crime that we're committing by not doing anything, he just goes back in and shuts up because then he's in trouble too. And I just find that very funny and weird and odd and such a mood.
Yeah, he's almost like a little Jiminy Cricket, but he's like, god damn it.
Yeah.
I'm part of the crime too.
We didn't mention this, but since I have the wiki open right now, Therm Scissorpunch's full government name, Thermonculus Christentivolt Scissorpunch.
So, say that one more time.
Thermonculus Christentivolt. No, Christentivolt Scissorpunch.
Get it right, Sal.
Yeah, excuse me. My apologies to Thermonculus. Yeah,
put some respect on that name.
I will. Especially when I tell this story. So,
Thermonculus.
Therm's, like, whole move is, like, you know, at the very beginning, like, one of the first things is, like, Therm Scissorpunch, you know. They tell so many stories about him, like, you know, I don't know if they're true, but who cares? His name is Scissorpunch. And I'm like, that's exactly how I felt with... when I got my Denny's trading card of Therm Scissorpunch. But like later he's having like a little crisis of identity where he's like, it's like those stories aren't even true. Like, but people just believe them because my name is Therm Scissorpunch. But like, how could I even live up to a name like Therm Scissorpunch? And the little cop dude jumps off of the other guy's back and is like, look, none of us have ever questioned your awesomeness. Like, so who doubts that you're Therm Scissorpunch? Who is it that's like talking all this crap? And he's like, Therm Scissorpunch. And he's like, so who's your greatest enemy? Therm Scissorpunch. He's like, so who is the person that you have to prove wrong to prove that you are worthy of the name Therm Scissorpunch? And he's like, Therm Scissorpunch. And then like a few pages later, it's like they're at the Battle of Jeddah. And he's like, I have to like live up to this name. And he like enters the Therm state and just like goes ham scissor punch on everybody and like destroys all of the soldiers and Path of the Open Hand and everybody that's fighting, you know. And then it's so hilarious because that like right after that, like the battle's done and he's just kind of like there. And like the Path of the Open Hand, like a little person comes over and they're like, a gift freely given with a flower. And he just, like, snips it in two with his scissor hand. And the little baby starts crying.
It's a little lobster claw.
And that's, like, the funniest thing to me for no real reason. But it's just, like, how rad is that? Like, what? Where did that come from, sir? Like...
Who hurt you, Daniel Jose Older?
Like, the joke could have ended when he, like, lived up to the name, right? But we took that extra step into, like, I have no time for children. like, you know, it's a very much of that, like, Return of the Jedi energy. Where the battle is ended, the rancor is crushed, Luke's so happy to get out of there. The door opens, people are assaulting him, but then we take an extra second to see this guy start crying and losing it for no reason. It's like, wait, I'm sorry, what happened here? Oh, he's breaking down right now. Like, who are you and why is this movie about you for 10 seconds? But now all of us are like, yo, Malik Keeley, that's my boy. You know what I mean? It's like little moments like that when Star Wars takes that extra step to do these like little side things. I love that.
And that, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if that kid pops up somewhere else as like.
Well, I mean, he's a
Nile kid.
I feel like that's, what's his name? That's the Elder Tromac. Because he's a, what is his? The three-eyed, he's a.
Oh, the Grand. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's a Grand. Oh, right. So I think it's him. Because we know he's there. We know, like, they're all there. And I know, like, the little kid that's a Grand is is Tromac.
Tromac, yeah.
They just didn't say his name.
Wasn't he one of the kids that was laying bombs in Path of Vengeance, too?
Yep.
Oh.
Sure was. Sure was. And we know, and he pops up in phase one of this very comic series. You know? He's one of... Yeah.
So we just saw his villain origin story. If only he had just accepted that flower.
Why is he so mad at Jedi? Like, Therm had nothing to do with this. So, so Sayakim is the dank grack, the little, like, Zabrak that's, like, taking Sav around when she's, like, over there with them. And she also is like, well, we have to, like, be careful, da-da-da-da. We're all pirates, so we're all, like, bad, but, like, this is our spell. Like, but she also takes her to, like, this really, here, you can, like, bunk with me. And she has, like, a little setup. It reminds me a little bit of Omega's setup and the gun port. She sort of made a little room in the back of the ship. It's very much that energy, but over here, it's like the same idea. A big window in the ship, little stuff hanging around, and like, you know, little beds on the floor. And I just thought that was cute. You know, and it's clear, like, later she's got a crush on Sav. Also cute. But, yeah. Oh, Sav's name is Savina Bessatrix Maligan. So they all, oh yeah, I remember that part. She's getting yelled at by her master with like the super pompadour. I don't remember her master's name though.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, there's one part where she's like, she's having a flashback to when she's building her lightsaber and she's like, this is like the coolest thing and like da 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 da. And like she just like builds it and ignites it right there. And like her master's like, Savina Bessatrix Maligan, you have some respect for these weapons above. And she's like, it's my lightsaber, I'm supposed to. Like, so like her, and then what ends up happening is, she calls her, like, after, like, she doesn't want her master to know she's gone because she snuck out, joined one secret thing, and then joined another secret thing, and now she knows she's going to be in trouble. So, at the Battle of Jeddah, the whole crew is running on the Battle of Jeddah, where they find out that Maz isn't there, that the whole thing was just to lure them over there, while the dude, Arkeek Vaughn and the Dank Grax return to unattended, Takodana and took control of the castle. So now they're all like, oh crap, we gotta go back to the castle and reclaim da da da. So that's when she calls. She's like, we need help. I have to call my master. I have to bite the bullet and get in trouble and let them know that they need to like reclaim the, help us reclaim the castle or whatever. So she calls her master and her master's like, we don't like, first of all, you're in trouble. And then second of all, we don't like get involved in pirate politics. You know, like this is not a job for Jedi. Like, but then when they end up fighting at the castle, and then Jedi show up to help. And then she's like, I thought they weren't going to like come help us. And then they're like, well, the Jedi were, I was overruled by an elder member of the council. And
before you say it, I just had to say this reveal. Like, I remember thinking like way early on, like, hey, that dude looks like that dude.
Yeah.
And then forgot about it. And then this happened, and I was like, no way, this is really cool. So go ahead, continue.
Well, the reveal doesn't come to like the end of the series. So at first you're like, oh, that's the same species. You know, when you first see the character. Anybody who is listening to this podcast and knows what the reveal is like, uh-huh. And anybody who doesn't know what the reveal is hanging on every word right now. Until I say it.
Everybody just fast forwarded to like, oh, when are they going to get to the reveal? Like,
When are they going to say it? So you like forget about it by the time you get to the actual reveal, because there's like not really anything other than like, oh, okay. Like, and so then the reveal is like, I was overruled by an elder member of the council. And Lava Lux, the member of the Dank Grax that was very punk rock and crazy and speaks in like blah, 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 like we were talking about earlier, who is a Kozian, steps forward and is like, yes, I am Master Terra Sanube. And I have decided that like we needed to rescue Maz and like help the people.
And blew like, my damn mind.
Yeah.
When he was like, yeah, I'm Terra Sanube. And I was like, I'm a bitch. Yeah. I should have seen it.
And then like Sav was like, you saw like through me the whole time? It's like, yes, I knew you were Sav the whole time. But like also I was even more undercover than you. And like it's just like funny little things like that.
Yeah.
It was a great reveal.
I'm Terra Sanube. You might not recognize me because of the green and purple paint and the way that I speak.
Because of my overwhelming radness at the moment. And like, you know, like you remember Terra Sanube from the Clone Wars, Terra Sanube, like, because as soon as it happens, I hear Terra Sanuba's voice. The whole comic I'm reading, and it's like, rah, boom, 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 do that. And then it's like, that is right, I have overridden. Because Terra Sanube has a very, like, specific way of talking in that very old man energy. Like, you know, this is the guy who was like, slow down, Ahsoka Tano. Like, when you slow down, you can see things more clearly, or whatever. You know, so as soon as Terra Sanube makes the switch and is like, that's right, it was me who was undercover this whole time. And I understand this is 400 years ago.
He doesn't talk like Captain Caveman anymore.
Yeah. Loved it. And even like Sav is like, what? And that's like, you know, the end of the comic. Sav's like, I can be a Padawan and a pirate. So she ends up being like Maz's homie still, helping out and also like being a good Padawan. But then it seems like her master got in trouble. It was like, the master's going to go have, like, a leave and be leaving Takodana while considering her actions or whatever. Please, Beast, why are you outside? There's a hurricane.
Well, I think her master, I think it was a little bit, some of that was self-imposed, too, of like,
yeah.
I kind of misjudged you. Mm-hmm. But also, Terra Sanube was like, sit down. Take a seat.
Take a seat, old pompadour.
Take master. A seat. And then her master was like, I'm 46.
It was the opposite of like I was actually a teenager, but okay.
I forgot. She just like flat out says her age when Terra Sanube's talking. She's like, I'm 36.
That's right. But I love that like she's like, well, but what does that mean? Am I just gonna my master is gone? Do I have to? And Terra Sanube's like, no, you can study with me. So I love the idea that like this kid who broke all the rules and went undercover, like, I don't know, say what you want about Terra Sanube, but I love Terra Sanube has this real like old man, but also like this crazy different energy of doing things in such a like fresh way that inspires as well as it teaches. Like even in those Ahsoka Tano episodes, like the gist is like, stop chasing these things, like think things through. That's the lesson that Terra is trying to teach Ahsoka, right? But like
the thing about Terra Sanube is that he comes off like there's something more fun about him.
Yeah.
Like even in during like the Clone Wars, you know that he's like, and we see it here, like he's done some crazy things by way of helping people, where like he wasn't limited by, you know, anybody else's expectations of him. He was just like, I just got to do it. If I got to do this crazy voice to infiltrate this group, guess what? I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And you see that in Clone Wars, like there's just something in his eyes that says like, this is the guy that was willing to go there to, you know, help all these other people out.
You know what? For like a little bit of that, like mischievous Yoda energy, you know what I mean? Like that, like a little bit like deceptive, a little bit mischievous and a little bit of that, like, hey, like I'm going to teach you something in a very strange way and you might not understand it till it's all done. But I think like that kind of stuff like makes a big impact. Like, and it's funny because I wonder, because that's such a mythic thing, right? That's what George Lucas was doing. Oh, he's like the little demon or whatever, the little goblin that appears and you like, you know, in Beauty and the Beast and you like, oh no, this is just a little useless thing. And then like, oh no, that was really the master, a wizard or whatever. That's literally Yoda's inspiration. And Yoda is this sort of like archetype. But like, Terra Sanube has that energy where like a lot of these Jedi they don't read that way and they're not even like played that way, like, you know what I mean? Like I just like that. I love that they took that step and it's such a familiar thing, But like, I love that Terra has that same sort of it. And it's like, it's clear even in the Clone Wars, like you see him training with children a lot. So, you know, very much of a Yoda type energy. Maybe all these High Republic Jedi sort of remember the good old days.
Yeah, I had to look it up. So Sav's master's name is Kaktorf, K-A-K-T-O-R-F.
Mm-hmm.
And Kaktorf, like by descriptions, would be like if Ruby Rod from The Fifth Element was a Jedi Master.
That's the hair. That's the hair.
Yeah.
Remember I said crazy pompadour? That's what I meant.
Yeah. And I was saying she, but Kaktorf is a male. So pardon me.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wikipedia says pronouns he, him. So I was like, all right, cool.
There you go. Now we know.
Yeah.
Now we know. Yeah. The Dankrax, a really fun idea. Like, they're all, like, semi kind of force sensitive, but not really. Like, the Dern or whatever just, like, moves around in shadows. Arkeek is, like, an ex-sorcerer of Tund, so has slight, you know. So Sav fits right in there. Oh, the trials, dude. Do you remember the little trials? When they're, like, to join the Dankrax. You must complete the trials. And the like the little girl's like, I am 99% sure you just made that up right now.
Yeah, that whole group was just as hell, man. And like in like you were talking about Dern, who just like he just pops up and is like, oh, what the hell, where did you come from? And again, I don't think he speaks at all.
Yeah, it's I think
like
you're
he's
right.
Just it's like he's like Lurch. Mm-hmm. Where he just shows it's like if Geode like actually was a person and just showed up, but like
right,
funny
right.
In a different way. Yeah, that scene with the trials.
In fact, I think Dern is like the, I think Dern's the person that kidnaps Maz. Like, Maz is walking, and she's like, where did this ugly curtain come from? Oh, and it's like his big-ass cloak, you know, because he's like standing right in front of her. And then they're like, Maz Kanata's been kidnapped, oh no. You know. There's a little bit of like, there's a lot of relationships in this book. And a lot of like I think it's Dexter Jetster and Maz. And they're like, wait, like, are you and Maz? Like, and they're like, well, it's not really like, she just makes me happy. She makes me smile. And we don't call it anything. We don't make it anything. But like, I just like being around her. So I try to come here every time I can and be around her. And then I think that comes up later when they're talking about Alak and that inspector Rav, who's like the cop that's following them. Like Alak, like the daughter, Quiet Shan, who doesn't really talk at all, like saves the inspector. I think Rav is his name again. And then like, he's like, why did you save me? Like, why, how could you don't even know? Raf, his name is Raf. And she's like, you make Alak smile. You make him happy. Like, and it's funny because, like, throughout the book, if you, like, look back, Alak a few times is like, well, we should inform the inspectors. Like, this is not enough. And then they're like, we're pirates. We don't need to talk to them. And then, like, three times he's like, well, let me contact Raf and, like, see if he knows any more intel. Like, why do you keep talking to the inspector? So it's, like, clear that he wants to talk to Raf. And Raf likes him as well. But it's like, and the daughter saves him because she's like, you make my dad happy. It's just
cute. it's that whole cat and mouse between them. And even like early on, like Alak, he's in that one, he's like in a room and he's like, well, what do I do if I see him again? Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Like, he's after us kind of thing. Like, there's like obviously this crush and he's super huge with like
mall spider legs. Yeah.
I'm looking at the last issue, like the last page of the last issue, and Therm Scissorpunch is wearing that cone hat.
Yes.
That Sav was wearing earlier.
it's like a little metal kind of like curved cone hat. And it's like so funny when Sav puts it on when she goes undercover with the Dankrax, because I don't know why, it's just comical to me. But then later when she like takes it off and like Therm reclaims himself, he like takes the hat and he starts wearing it. And that's when she starts wearing her, when she leaves the Dankrax and her cover's blown, she turns back and, you know, she takes her hat back. You know, so I just find it funny that he's like, well, I can use this.
He looks goofy as hell.
Yeah, that little hat, just I don't think anybody can pull it off. I'm not sure.
Look, I agree.
It makes Sav look 20 times more adorable. I'll give her that.
Yeah.
but
and it makes Thurm look more Thermoculus or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did you mean Thermoculus Crescentivolt the Scissor Punch?
I hope we never forget that name from now on. When the From a Certain Point of View solo book comes out in 2038, there better be like an origin of the name for Therm Scissor Punch.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be great. I can't wait. Although, yeah, let's not think about it too hard. But yes, I want more Therm Scissor Punch. Like, if this has taught me anything, it's what I already knew when I watched Solo, that I didn't get enough Therm Scissor Punch. But I'm glad that somebody saw Therm Scissor Punch laying out there on the table. And I'm glad that DJ Elder was like, I'm going to pick this one up too. Thank you.
So like, it makes me wonder, like, if in his downtime, he's like a gardener and he uses like his lobster claw to like, you know, trim the hedges.
To prune and shear.
Yep.
Yeah, I too think that Thermonculus might make an excellent gardener. it's good. It's a cute story. It rolls through all. I mean, we didn't talk about this much, but it goes through the Battle of Jeddah. They go to Jeddah and they're like, "Oh, we're like pirates and we're supposed to be like creating." Oh no, because the Dankgrax were contracted to like help with the fight and create havoc. Which, like, as if we've read all the other stuff, like we have, we know that like that's right. The Path of the Open Hand and the, you know, whoever Graf, the guy whose name started with a T.
I don't remember.
Two syllables. Somebody Graf, one of the Grafs was like hiring people and putting all this together to break up the peace talks so that they could steal all the crap that they wanted to steal in the other comic series. You know, but like they go through the battle, they're there in the thick of it. And I like it again. So you get to see the armies. Like, all this time of all the, you know, we got the George Mann audiobook, The Battle of Jeddah, audio drama, sorry. We got Cataclysm that touches on it a little bit. We got A Path of Vengeance that goes into some of it. But we don't get to see it the way that we do here. At least the soldiers. Because even in the High Republic series, they're on Jeddah the entire time. But we sort of see from the Jedi's point of view, and they're, like, in these little spots. But we don't see the armies. So we see the, like, I really like the design of the Irem and the Erono armies, like their ships, like the Irem ships look like sharks, you know, like undersea creatures, and their armor's all blue. And then the Erono people, their armor's all red and red orange, and their ships look like scorpions, you know? I thought that was good.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was looking at one of the issues of the books when he clips Tromax's flower. and like Tromax, the way he's drawn, like he's got like old man face on little baby body, and he's like a green three-eyed grin. You hear whomsoever makes little Tromax cry must receive the Barbatash smash, and it's like this big gigantic dude, and that's when Therm Scissor Punches goes ham on everybody.
Yeah,
knocks his big ass dude out.
But, like, they're all fight, like, yeah, the Barbatash smash. And I think Barbatash is from something else. I just don't remember what. But, like, he's fight, like, Dexter Jetster's in that mix. Like, they're all going off on this dude. Like, they're all in it.
He got some killer hair, man. My man's got some perfect.
Yeah, yeah. He's very, like, lion energy.
Yeah, good for him.
You know? I don't remember what he's from, though. Man, that would be. I wonder if he's. I don't know if I can look it up that fast.
I did like that this story like didn't lean in too heavily on everything else that was going on with phase two. Like, we have to go to Jeddah to go to XYZ, and it's like, oh snap, Maz Kanata got kidnapped, we gotta go. So they're kind of in and out. Like, they get into the fray real thick, but
yeah,
Maz is more important than sticking around and doing all the other stuff that they gotta do. But she kind of employs that. So it's just like, yo, we got to take care of the boss.
Right, right. Yeah. And I also like that, like of all the stuff in phase two, like the Battle of Jeddah is very much like the focal point of almost all of these series. Like almost every piece of media touches on it. You know what I mean? Like both comic series, you got the audio thing and then Path of it. So like, it's a very big, even though like the Night of Sorrow stuff that comes next is like the ultimate culmination of phase two, like the Battle of Jeddah is pretty cool, and I just love seeing it in color and with all the art and everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
I think what they did really well with Phase 2 is like showed just how big the Battle of Jeddah was by having it touch in all of these different stories, because there's overlap, but they're all like completely different. You know, there's all these different fights and battles that are happening on Jeddah, not to mention what's happening like way out in the deserts where the big statues are and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That this book doesn't even touch on that. Like, that's in the main comic. You know what I mean? So, but again, I did like that this kind of like dipped in and dipped out.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we can't have kids fighting here because like there's some gnarly stuff that happens during the Battle of Jeddah.
Right, right, right. Oh, so check this out, dude. Barbatash was an elder of the Path of the Open Hand. He was at the Night of Sorrow. He escaped the path in a shuttle. And later, he was an elder on Trimat 4, known as the Elders of the Path. Those people descended from the Path. That's where Zine... So he was on that planet where Zine came from.
So, he's also like 500 years old or something.
Yeah. So him, like... No wonder he'd like he's been watching over Tromac his whole life.
Yeah, no wonder his hair looks so good. He's had a lot of time to
Well, I mean, what he's got to be middle aged right here, you know.
Not with that hair.
It's not till way later, bro. Way later, we'll see how he looks in a. I bet if we go back and dig towards Volume 1, he's got to be in the beginning first couple issues of that comic, when the Nile come to Trimat 4.
Yeah, I haven't read those books in a while, man.
Yeah, I want to go back and look through them, especially like because I know it's connected to, you know, Tromac and the Elders of... I forgot the name of the crew. Elders of the Path. Now that makes more sense. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, we have until November for when Phase 3 like officially kicks off with the first George Mann book. So, I'm going to have to revisit those. Those books, the first High Republic adventures, are probably like the one spot that I remember the least.
Okay.
Like, especially the early part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I remember all the stuff with Zine and Court, you know, like some of the later stuff. But I have to bring this up. Like, one of the things in the Tales of Light and Life with Court, when they're in the cafeteria, and he doesn't speak a ton. Because he doesn't speak basic very well, but apparently he's been practicing and he's really good at doing impersonations. I don't want to say too much more than that, but like that scene kind of had me cracking up in the Tales of Light and Life. So a little sizzle for when people do get to read that book. But Quart's awesome in that story.
Yeah.
And it's only for a little bit too. He's only in it for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like there's one of the stories that's, you know, that he's in, you know, but, yeah, like a Quart's one of my favorites. Like I just think he looks awesome and like still looks pretty rad. And I'm waiting for Phase 3 comics. It looks like it's Quart and Zine, and I'm like rad. Like on the cover of the first issue, they already, you know, they dropped the cover. It's SDCC or whatever, you know. So we got to see a little bit of the stuff coming up, along with Jedi Master Keeve Trennis, and what else have we seen? Yeah, some of the like book covers and stuff that they dropped look pretty cool so far. I don't know if I'm going to revisit a lot of Phase 1. A thing that I do recommend, though, is I picked up that Chronicles of the Jedi. And it sort of, it's a real good primer for mostly Phase 1. It has a little bit of Phase 2 in it as well. But it's a pretty good overview of, like, the big events in Phase 1. So, because it's got good art in it, too. But I was going through it just because I liked it and I liked the art and stuff. But it's like, if you don't have time to go back and read all 12 books or whatever, you know, maybe take a dig through that thing. It's nice. It's pretty concise. You'll miss some of the finer points, but it's a little, if you already read the books, especially, it's a pretty good primer to get you ready for Phase 3.
I feel the same way about the Timelines book. All Phase 1 broken down into little nuggets.
Oh, that's cool.
And good for that team for however they formatted that, because there's a lot of like concurrent story arcs that happen, and like so like there's an actual line that runs through and it's got points on it, and then it'll break off to like five branches of all the stuff that's happening on Valo or you know, on Starlight or whatever. So
that's rad. Do you do the like short fiction stuff, like those little stories that showed up in Insider and then later they sort of package them up and put out a little hardcover?
I was. I did all the Phase One books or all the Phase One magazines, and then I got through maybe three or four of them for Phase Two. That all happened at the one cantina, the one bar.
Enlightenment.
I forget what it's called.
Enlightenment.
Enlightenment. Yeah, that's it. Tales from Yeah. So, and it's cool seeing Enlightenment in the main comic, and like the one bartender character that has a name that's similar to another character that always confused me. What is it?
Yeah. It's like, oh God, like the Jedi's name is. Now I can't remember either of the names, but yes, in audiobook format, they're very similar.
Yeah, I couldn't remember what the hell it was. Yeah, I did do it like in a couple of those. It's like, I'll tell you stories if you buy me a drink kind of thing. And it's like, well, here's one where we helped a dude blah, blah, blah. And this was kind of the thing. Yeah, it's weird. Like those stories are fun, but they to me, they felt more connected with Phase Two. From what I was reading since Enlightenment is on Jeddah.
Yeah.
Where with Phase One, like a lot of that stuff happens on Starlight, but like the only connection that you have into the books is just the characters by name, like Pika and like that whatever that couple's name
Pika
is.
Pika and Joss, and then like the security person, I forgot their name. Like there's the Mon Cal security person and Velka Jahan, the other security person. I can't remember. There's like four characters that show up, and then throughout you'll be like, oh, there's Avar Chris is in this one, or oh, this one has, you know, Avar Staros or whoever. I kind of felt the other way. I felt like the Phase One ones connected more just because it was happening like during all the stuff that we were reading about. Whereas Tales of Enlightenment, it seems like the stories they're telling all happened like way before. But it is really cool to have it at that cantina, especially the characters that are involved, because it really makes me, I really enjoy having those characters around. And that's like a main character in the Battle of Jeddah thing. So like, I kind of enjoyed that. And when I go do the Battle of Jeddah, I like feel a lot more connected to those characters.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's why I connected with the Phase Two stories more, because so much of it happens on Jeddah, and it gave more color to the environment.
Yeah, where, for sure.
Like, you learn a lot. Like, you don't have to read the Phase One stories to know what Starlight Beacon is like, because a fair amount of stuff happens there, and especially in the comics, there's a lot of Starlight Beacon stuff. So, but with Phase Two, since like Jeddah's there, but it just kind of adds more color to the tapestry of what Jeddah was like.
Yeah, yeah.
Before, you know, what the battle was, before all that stuff happens.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. The I don't know if you heard, the Phase 3 ones, I believe they're going to be written by Lydia Kang, and they're going to be Tales from the Occlusion Zone.
Yeah.
If you're caught up on Phase 3, like, that sounds very interesting to me.
And I wonder what that's going to be like. Like, it's hard to speculate because the Occlusion Zone is completely closed off from the rest of the galaxy. So it's like, it doesn't sound like they're going to be having some good times out there. Like, it's like Lydia King's writing stories about people who are like beat down and oppressed. Like, that doesn't like have the same, you know, she's writing Dr. Aphra and Deadpool. Like, I can't imagine. Long, there's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, Lydia King did Cataclysm.
Yes.
Okay, so that makes more sense to me. I apologize. because she can do all of that. Because Cataclysm, like, it's hard to pick favorites for Phase 2 because I loved Cataclysm. I loved Path of Vengeance. Mm-hmm. But, like, just thinking of, like, all of the technicalities that Lydia King had to put into that book, like, there's so many characters. Right. There's so many environments, like all the wild, like Yaddle stuff with the little girl, like the it always baffles me, and I'm always like really appreciative of how much planning they put into all of this. They have to do all of this with multiple authors to write concurrent storylines without completely flubbing everything. And what she did with that book, it's like, especially like trying to map in Convergence, because she didn't write Convergence, you know, Zoraida Cordova wrote the first book. And it's just like, you hear the interviews, it's like, Like, we talked a little bit about, like, what character was like, but Sarita's like, I didn't know what she was going to write in that book. We didn't really talk about the planning. It was, mm-hmm. this is what you need to set up, and then this is what you need to conclude. And those books, they work well together, even though Convergence yeah. wasn't my favorite book of the phase. Like, Cataclysm, to me, uplifts Convergence because they're so connected.
That's another example of how well thought out and well done. Like, I don't know who to, like, I mean, obviously they're both amazing authors who can do amazing things with characters. Mm. But, like, you know, I also give a lot of credit to, like, the Del Rey teams or the people, like, whoever decides, like, hey, we want to do an Inquisitor story. We should call Delilah Dawson. Whomever makes these decisions, like, I think that's part of where the praise should be kept, too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, having these the right artists chosen for the job, I think makes a difference and is why these things work so well. Like, you have Zoraida, who really create, you know, like, Axel Greylark is such a huge piece in those books, Convergence and Cataclysm. That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Give myself 10 points for not saying Catalyst. and, like, the fact that one author can make it and pick it up and then the other author can take it and run with it. And, like, they both feel like the same character. And they both feel true and like you can read both of those books and they connect so very well. Like that deserves applause, I think. And also the fact, like, I understand that it happens a lot in Star Wars, especially when you have, like, very well established, whatever, legacy characters, you know, people write about Obi-Wan or Anakin or Han Solo or, like, okay, like, you also deserve credit for writing a familiar character. But also when there's a character that has so much established, I feel like that's a lot, at least you have a lot more groundwork to work from than mm-hmm. like, oh, my name's Zoraida and I invented this thing. Here it is. Here's what I think about it. Go ahead, take it wherever you want, you know, and then for it to still feel like the same character, still feel true and to still, like, work together so well. I think, like, that's an amazing thing. And I think that those authors do really well in that.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen, well, at least I don't think it did a lot in the EU, where you look at all the different books that Yoda was in, and there were some times where Yoda and someone would Yoda didn't feel like Yoda, and that was a character that had, like, the foundations were laid in the movies, mm-hmm. and, you know, to have just a few characters, even Chancellor Greylark, the way yeah. that she's written in both Absolutely. Of those books, too, like, she goes through a massive change.
Love Chancellor Greylark in
yeah,
not Cataclysm. Yes,
yeah, she goes through a massive change, like, her arc, and to have her character still feel as consistent in the second book through most of that growth is, like, you know, the total kudos to them. And
yeah,
and again, however Lydia Kang came into writing Star Wars, I don't know the origin story there for her, mm-hmm. but, like, what a get, because, like I said, Cataclysm is a phenomenal book.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I said, like, the artists, the people that they're choosing to create these things, usually they like, knock it out of the park. And, like, whoever, like I said, chooses these things for the team, like, Mike Chen has been doing amazingly with Brotherhood. You know, you have people like Claudia Gray who have been knocking out of the park consistently. Kevin Scott, you know, all of these High Republic artists have consistently wrecked shop on everything they came to do. But then you have the stuff that's, like, I don't want to call it disconnected, but is not quite, like, the same as a publishing initiative. Mm-hmm. So you have, like, hey, you know, I keep bringing up Delilah Dawson, but that's because I just read a book recently that was really good. You know what I mean? Like, hey, do you want to do a book about an Inquisitor? Yes, that makes sense to me. You should call Delilah Dawson because she crushed it in Phasma. That mm-hmm. I understand that. I understand how we got here. You know, like, whoever's making those calls, you know, I don't know if that's, like, Tom Holler over at Del Rey or whoever on the Del Rey team, or if there's, like, story group people involved, but good job on getting the right artist to create the right thing for us that's giving us consistently amazing content.
Yeah, whoever's doing the vetting for that is doing a great job. And, yeah. and now that we have the, from a certain point of view, Return of the Jedi coming out, to have, and all three of these books have had new creators come in,
mm-hmm.
again, to find these people to, like, you know, I think you'd be a good fit to write X character or this tone. Yeah. However, the you know they guide them through all of that. Because mm-hmm. I mean, you can totally pick the wrong author for some of these stories,
right,
and
right.
have it not work. But more often than not, they work really well.
Yeah, absolutely, totally and completely agree. But yeah, this is a great series. Like I said, I love DJ O's voice and writing and style. And this is something like so much. It's so fun. It's so enjoyable. There's so many colorful characters in it. And it's like, it's definitely something you can pick up from phase two that you don't have to read the rest of phase two for. You know what I mean? Like if you want to go that route, but it's just a lot of fun and it's really focused on the characters. So Sav Maligan is like the core character of the series. She's amazing. She is very enjoyable to watch and adventure. And it's so clear, like her voice and her point of view. And I don't know. I think that's like what makes this series so much fun for me.
Yeah, that balancing act for her was, like I said, it was fun. It was funny. Mm-hmm. It was, and I have to say, like the artistic style matches so well with the way DJ writes, where something about it is like it's like 10% cartoon and like 90% still like Star Wars,
right,
you know, be it whichever artist is doing it, because they switch midway. It fits his writing style, which again, that's not something you get all the time. To have like a perfect pairing like that. So
go ahead.
I was going to say, and if anybody listening to this, if you haven't read these books, like there's still a ton of stuff that we didn't get into, that the little jokes, the way the battles are handled, mm-hmm. the way, you know, Sav like kind of meets everybody in the beginning and like establishes her relationship with everybody, because she has to like, because she's living that double life. like it's well done. So like, there's a lot that you can still get from the series that we didn't even talk about.
Absolutely.
Like we just kind of went over some of the bullet points.
Yeah. Our description of this book is not going to be equal to your experience reading this book.
Yeah. You know, it was a lot of fun.
It's great fun. It's super energetic. Harvey Tolley Bao is one of my favorite artists since he started doing High Republic Adventures. Mm-hmm. And like, he has like this way, like all that Therm Scissor Punch stuff we were talking, those are like the Tolley Bao splash pages that like go over the entire 2-page spread. Like, and it's so rad the way that he does that. He did it a lot in phase one, like, you know, at a lot of these like very dramatic moments, you have these Jedi battling, all of this chaos happening, or, you know, the one that comes to mind right now is the, what was it? The Great Jedi Rumble Race. And there's like 42 Jedi like racing each other. And it's like this giant splash page of Jedi and Padawans flipping everywhere as they like race through Starlight Beacon. And it's hilarious and beautiful.
Well, if you want like the most dramatic Talabout drawings, look at the Free Comic Book Day High Republic Adventures that came out this year.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
That like the end of that story, I'm not going to spoil it, but like, oh, the emotions of that and like how that's all I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, it's chaos and it's beautiful. That's the only way I can describe it.
Absolutely.
Like the way that those pages are drawn out. It's wonderful.
Yeah. It's great. I can't wait till phase three to catch up with some of those characters, from phase one, High Republic Adventures.
A lot of questions about,
yes,
some of those people.
Definitely. You know, we're all wondering who did this. So I can't wait to see what's going on with that. But all in all, like you were talking about phase two before. I think one of my biggest things on phase two that I've been saying is it started at like a slow burn, but it ends so bombastic. Like it builds so quickly and so fast that like almost all of the books in phase two have this point where you get to the point where you can't put it down, you know,
100%.
And it's pretty fairly consistent. Whereas I would say in phase one of the High Republic, like it's almost like phase one starts off bombastic and then you're dealing with things that happen throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this phase, things sort of start off slow but then they hit in such a dramatic way that it's like you can't take your eyes off of whatever it is, comic book, audio drama.
Yeah, it's like everything that happens in the first wave of Phase 2 happens almost in its own kind of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Until it's like all of these little wicks are lit, all these little fuses are lit.
Yeah.
Until, you know, the powder keg of Jedha blows up and then everything branches off from that afterwards. Like,
yeah.
The second wave of Phase 2 has been some of my favorite stuff to come out in a while. So.
For sure. Good stuff. Let's see. Once again, yeah, Phase 3 is coming soon. Can't wait to see how all that stuff connects, especially now that Phase 2 is done. So I already have like my connections to Phase 1. So now I'm waiting to see if they drop any more little secrets. Like I'm still, you know, my one chief mystery is trying to figure out who that person is with Yoda at the end of Midnight Horizon.
I know, dude. Like I think every book that I read in Phase 2, I was like, is that the one? Is it this dude? Is it that girl? Like, because there's a little bit of a description, and Yoda says, to know our future, we have to go back into our past.
Who is it, Sal?
Yeah.
Who's the one?
I've said, well, I don't, you've probably heard my guesses. I have three guesses. One of them might be unreasonable depending on lifespan. But I now have three guesses. One, I think Yana.
Ooh,
two.
Yeah.
If I can figure out a way, because apparently he's human, but what if it's, I don't know how or why or if a human has the kind of lifespan to be around 150 years later, but I also think, Aslan Rel?
That's the one. Yeah, I was trying to remember his name.
And
that might be my guess.
And then my last guess would be, it's still Elder Tromac, but he got messed up. Now he's just covered up. Those are my three guesses.
There's an outsider chance that it could be Therm Scissor Punch, but it's unlikely.
They didn't describe the hat, so I'm leaving Therm Scissor Punch out. If they were like a bandaged, a formless figure with a cloak and a pointy, bendy metal hat.
Who's singing Shri Karai Karai?
Mm-hmm.
That.
I can't remember the name of that. They never name. They just keep saying, "Oh, the old at the." Jedi da, 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 at the temple that used to sing it was that like every night.
Yeah, the caretaker used to sing the song to it. And it comes up, for again, little sizzle, it comes up in Tales from Light and Life.
Yeah, it does.
Tales of Light and Life.
Yeah, it does.
And I remember hearing it there and I was like, doing a thing.
Here we go. It's never going away. All right. Rick, appreciate you. Thank you for joining me, weathering this storm with me as it was.
Listen, it was nice to visit Kamino for a little while.
There you go, yeah. A little bit of soft jazz thoughts. High Republic thoughts. Deep thoughts on the High Republic with Rick and Sal. any last thoughts? You all ready? You all packed up and ready for Phase 3, yeah?
100%, man. And I have to say, like, I know, like, things are weird in the creative space for Star Wars because of strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know where we both stand on that. And you and I and a few others have always loved and appreciated what happens in the book space. So to have this right now is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
To talk about stuff that happens on the page when, even though there is a new show coming out, and I think we both discussed that, like, we're not going to be covering it in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, out of respect for those that are striking. But the books are always there. And there's so much fantastic stuff. And I'm glad that I get the opportunity to talk about this stuff with you and some of the other people in the book space, because not everybody has the time to read the books. And it's there's a lot of cool stuff. So, like, for anybody, mm-hmm. if you're on the fence about reading books, you know, there are points in the High Republic where it's better to jump in than others. But most Star Wars books you can read on their own.
Right, right.
And just kind of figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Without, you know, there's enough context in them to kind of tell you where they are as far as timeline goes, where you're not too confused. But these books are so rich. There's so many talented people that are doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about some fun comics tonight. Yeah.
And even, like, most importantly, they're just fun. So if you're Hell just yeah. on the fence and just want to enjoy something that you haven't enjoyed, pick up a comic book, dude. Get a library card. Go wherever you go. Pick up a couple graphic novels. See if any of them strike your fancy. You know, if I had to recommend any, I would say for sure pick up some Dr. Aphras, pick up any High Republic, you know, pick up, let's see, what else can I think of? There's 72 Darth Vader series, so if you're into that, there's plenty out there for you. But I would specifically recommend, like, pick up, Shattered Empire. That's a good time.
Shattered Empire, the Charles Soule Vader run, the Kanan comic that you covered a few weeks ago. Kanan.
For sure.
Any of those 5-issue miniseries that they started off the relaunch of Star Wars comics with. It was like Leia, Mace, Chewbacca.
I would say Leia, most important. Like, Leia's might be my favorite one of that one.
Yeah, that's a good run.
Yeah, and I really like that Han Solo Imperial Cadet. That was really good, too.
Oh, yeah, man. I forgot about that book.
Yeah, man, I just thought about that. I like my cadet uniforms.
Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's plenty out there. And there's just, like, it's all so well, like, if you're into Jedi stuff, man, pick up some High Republic's out there for you. You like smugglers, pick up someone Han Solo in it. Or Lando. Lando's got, like, 2 series out there. You into, like, the more army stuff, pick up, like, Phasma or anything Imperial or Darth Vader. You know what I mean? Like, you it's almost like there's something out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. Almost. You want to see your favorite people? Go pick up any Star Wars mini. And all you got to do is figure out where it is and you'll be fine. Just be like, oh, this one's between Star Wars and Empire. Got it. Oh, this one's between Empire and Jedi. Got it. So you'll be fine.
If you like a little bit of horror in your Star Wars, pick up the Dark Droid stuff that's happening right now.
Oh, that's good times right there. I just started that and I am interested. It's like, we're only, what, like 2 issues into a crossover? 3 maybe?
Yeah.
But it's turning out to be very fun so far, and I didn't know what to expect exactly.
And if you want little teases on any of the stuff that's happening in the comic books, go to Broaxium. Look up the quick shots. You might see a familiar face like mine talking about some of these books. We don't spoil anything. We just give little snippets and previews, quick shots for Broaxium over on the YouTube channel.
Right on, right on. You want to see Luke Skywalker with the yellow lightsaber? Go pick up Star Wars right now. Let's see what else I got here. Yeah, I guess that's about it. You know, you can check us out at theroguerebels.com for all things Rogue Rebels on all socials, even those weird ones that are popping up every now and then, at The Rogue Rebels, except for the artist formerly known as Twitter, where we are Rogue Rebels fam. That might not be around soon. But anyway, thanks for listening. We appreciate you. Make sure you give us 5 stars or whatever, wherever. Hey, I think we're on Amazon now. So, there goes that. Yay, Amazon, I guess. Okay.
Jeff Bezos needs your money.
I guess so. But here's the trick. I don't have any. Wait, no, that doesn't work. That doesn't affect him at all. Anyway, wherever you listen, chances are we're there. Thank you for listening. And we'll be covering other stuff soon. That is probably going to be print content. Or animation, because somebody's saying that animation is not covered under the struck content. So we'll see. We'll see. But I might stick to the page. Just because, out of respect and solidarity for my fellow artists out there who create all those things we've known and love our entire lives. Give these people money. Dank Grax for life. The fate this podcast is of over.
All Jedi. For control of the Force itself.